Luke 24, and it's from verse 13. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what's more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they'd seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it's nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It's true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread.
So as we've said, we're starting this new series looking at the resurrection accounts of Jesus. And we're starting with this one from Luke 24. And I think it's an interesting place to start because it's without doubt the most detailed, perhaps the most colourful of all the resurrection accounts that we see in the Bible. There aren't any that are as detailed as this. And Luke, who wrote Luke's Gospel and wrote Acts, is well known for the detail that he puts into his accounts. And that is certainly the case here. I guess a little bit of background is needed. This is the day of Jesus' resurrection. It's the same day that the women have been to the tomb and they found that it is empty. And we find two of Jesus' disciples, Cleopas and one other, walking 7 miles on a road from Jerusalem down to this place called Emmaus. They've heard that the women have said that Jesus has come back to life, that it's empty, but they simply don't believe this to be true. And so begins this long, hopeless walk to Emmaus. And on that road they meet a man. It's Jesus, but they don't recognize him. They're not able to see that it's Jesus. And he gives them what is thought to be perhaps a 4-hour sermon, a 4-hour talk. But it's only later when they get to Emmaus and they're eating with him and he breaks bread that they recognize who he is. At the end of the reading, Jesus disappears at that moment and these two disciples run back to Jerusalem through the night, full of hope. And I guess if there's a main point to what we're going to be looking at in this passage, it's this, that Jesus walks with us in our hopelessness so that we might become a people of great hope. This is what we learn from this, that Jesus walks with us in our hopelessness so that we can become a people who have great hope. So let's dig into it a little bit. And the first thing that I want us to think about is this, that we can all walk the road of hopelessness. Now, even the most positive people, even the most optimistic, even the most resourceful people can have moments of hopelessness. All of us have perhaps been in this place. Yeah, these two disciples don't believe that Jesus has come back to life. And in their sadness, in their hopelessness, they find themselves on this road. They've almost given up. They're not even looking for Jesus anymore. They're not going to stay in Jerusalem to see if he has come back to life. They've given up. They don't even have that idea in their heads. Maybe even they're scared. They've seen Jesus executed, and maybe they think his followers could be next. So they're getting out of Jerusalem. They're heading away. Maybe they were from Emmaus originally. Maybe this was where they used to live before they met Jesus. So they're going back to a previous life. Maybe they're going to go back, see if they can get their jobs back that they used to have. For them, Jesus is dead. And they're going back to where they used to be. And we read this in verse 17. As Jesus approaches them, remember at this point they still don't recognise him, but he asks them, what are you discussing as you walk along? And there's this thing, this description, this detail from Luke. They stood still, their faces downcast. You know, have you had that moment in your life, maybe you have, where the pressures of life, the sadnesses you're carrying, the despair, the hopelessness that you feel, just kind of stops you in your tracks? You stand still. It's like you can't go on. You get the impression that's how these disciples are feeling. And then later on is almost this heartbreaking moment where they're talking about who Jesus was to them, what he's done. And they say, but we had hoped. We had hoped that he was going to be the one who was going to redeem Israel. We had hoped. It's the past tense. In other words, they don't have any hope anymore. They were all in for Jesus. They had left their homes, they had left their families, they had left their jobs to follow this man, Jesus. And they'd done that for 3 years. Jesus was going to turn Jerusalem upside down. He was going to turn the world upside down. They believed him when he said that he was the Messiah. He was going to redeem them. Now, this word redeem means to bring freedom. He was going to bring freedom to their lives and to everybody. Now, when they're talking to Jesus here, they say, and what's more, it's the third day since this took place. You know, for Jewish believers, it's when somebody died, it took 3 days for their soul to leave the body. This is what they believed. And so when somebody died, you waited 3 days for them to be really dead, as it were. And so for them to say this, that it's 3 days since Jesus had been executed, since he'd been put in the ground, since he'd been put in the tomb, they're saying he's really dead. He's absolutely dead. This is a certainty. This has actually happened. And it's almost like as Jesus has died and as he's been put in the tomb, so have their hopes, so have their dreams. They've also died. Now, some of us know this feeling all too well, don't we? We had hoped that a job or a career that we were following was going to take us in a certain direction, that it was going to fulfill us, it was going to bring us purpose. And that's no longer the case. We had hoped that a relationship we were in was with the one, the person we were going to be in love with for the rest of our lives, but we've broken up. We had hoped that our children would grow up in a certain way and maybe they would become Christians, maybe they would be part of the church, but they've taken a different route. We had hoped that our marriage would last a lifetime, But people have let us down and we've split up. We have hoped that our health would improve. We had hoped that we would have many more years with someone, but bereavement has taken those dreams from us. We had hoped, we had hoped, we had hoped. But that's no longer the case. All of us can walk the road of hopelessness. Even the most resourceful, even the most positive of us have moments where we say, I'd hoped, but those hopes are lost. You know, I think often we find ourselves on this road because we can't see, we can't imagine anything beyond the current predicament that we're facing. We can't see past it. You know, maybe that's the definition of hopelessness, isn't it? That our situation, that the difficulty we're in, we just can't see a way past it. And you know, the disciples here, these two disciples certainly can't see past the tomb. They can't see past the fact that Jesus has died. They can't see past the fact that it's 3 days since he died. They can't see anything else. They can't see a different future. And so their hopes are gone. One person who's written on this passage says this, that a temporal redemption of the Jews by a conqueror appears to have been the redemption that they looked for. Spiritual redemption by a sacrificial death was an idea their minds cannot take in. You know, in other words, that they saw Jesus as a certain type of Messiah, as a certain type of conqueror, one who would defeat the Romans, who would defeat their enemies, who would bring their freedom in a certain way. The idea of a spiritual redemption and his sacrificial death was just an idea they just had never thought of. In other words, the disciples couldn't see any other way. They couldn't see the idea of his resurrection. They couldn't see any other outcome. So Jesus is dead. So there's this sense of them just giving up. This is how it is. You ever been there? Where maybe you're feeling that even now as you're watching this. The situation you're in just seems so hopeless. I might as well just give up. Just go back to my life before. And you know, it's into this hopelessness. It's into this sadness that Jesus comes. First, as a stranger who they don't recognise. But perhaps most beautifully, Jesus comes as a person. You know, whilst they're trying to figure out, while they're trying to think through in their heads, while they're trying to rationalise the situation that their leader, their Messiah, is dead, Jesus doesn't come as a clever argument. He doesn't come as a doctrine or a piece of theology. In fact, he doesn't even immediately solve their sadness. It takes them the whole walk to Emmaus and then part of the evening. And what Jesus does is he is present with them. He walks with them. While in their hopelessness, they're walking away from Jerusalem and they're walking away from Jesus. Jesus comes looking for them. He goes looking for them on that road to Emmaus, on their hopeless road. And he finds them. Isn't that incredible? While they're walking away from him, he comes looking for them and presents himself as a person. He begins a relationship with them. He starts a conversation with them. Now, we can all walk the road of hopelessness, but it's on that road that we can know that Jesus is with us. He joins us on our walk and he tells us what we need to hear. Now, I wonder what your go-to solution is when you're feeling low, when you're feeling hopeless. You know, do you jump on the TV and numb yourself with another box set from Netflix. Maybe you're the sort of person who withdraws and isolates from people. Maybe your solution is just to work harder. You know, I'm feeling hopeless. I'm just going to throw myself into my work. Maybe there are old habits. Maybe some harmful addictions that you go back to. Maybe you're somebody who just ignores their feelings and pushes them down. Or maybe you do the opposite. Maybe you only listen to your feelings and you become completely driven by your feelings. You know, when our hopes are dashed, we all turn to these sort of solutions, as it were, to self-medicate us, because it's so hard to say that God is good in those situations. It's so hard to find any sort of good that we can't see God at all, that we turn to these other ways to make ourselves feel better. We think God can't be part of this at all, that he must have disappeared. My situation's so bad, even God isn't here. You know, in a few years ago, in 2019, a Bible college lecturer in America, together with his wife, they lost a baby girl. She died. And they had this difficult situation to face because they had another son, and they had to explain to their son what had happened and try and explain that this sister that he had hoped for had passed away. And they wanted, because they were Christians, they wanted to explain to their son that even though this situation they were in was so sad and so hopeless, they wanted him to know that God was still good in it. So they had these conversations with their son that they then turned into a book for children. And this book is called The Moon Is Always Round. And this is some pictures from that book. And you know, you can see in this picture the image there of the father talking to the son. And you see the different stages, the different phases of the moon. And it's a crescent. And then maybe you can see half the moon, but you can see all of it is there. And the father then saying to the son, you know, even when you can only see part of the moon is always round. The moon never changes shape. It's just that what we can see of it. Now, it's a vivid imagery of the moon to explain to children how God's goodness is always present. Even when it might appear, and God's goodness might appear to be obscured by our upsetting or difficult circumstances, God is always good. And even when we can only see part of the moon is always round. God is always good. And there's a sense on this road to Emmaus that this is what Jesus is telling these two despairing disciples. You know, it says this, doesn't it? That beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. You know, Jesus knew that what these disciples needed to hear in the middle of their despair, in the middle of their hopelessness, in this situation where all they can see is what's in front of them. It's like he's pointing behind and saying, but God is always good. Let me tell you what the scriptures say, that there is going to be one who is the Messiah, that there is hope, that all is not lost. Now Jesus says to them that, you know, the Bible isn't a series of disconnected stories, but a single narrative that points to one person. Jesus. He's saying, you know, our hope has a name, the Messiah. It's Jesus. This is what they needed to hear. A message that God is always good. From the beginning of time right up until now, God is always good. Now, we don't have a script of what Jesus said. We don't have a copy of his sermon. This is the extent of it that we can see. This is what Jesus did with those disciples on the road to Emmaus. He points to himself. The whole of the Old Testament points to Jesus. Moses points to Jesus. The prophets, the poetry, they all point to Jesus. God is good. He always has been good. He's always been planning on rescuing his people. And into their hopelessness, Jesus tells them what they need to hear. And he tells us what we need to hear too if we listen to him. He speaks hope. He doesn't bring rules. He doesn't bring religion. He doesn't bring a quick fix solution. But he points to himself and he says, I am who you need. I am what you need. In your hopelessness, in your despair, in your sadness, Jesus is what you need. A relationship with him. The one who died and came back to life. The one who went low before he was raised up. The one who went through his own deep grief and his own hopelessness and his own sadness before he experienced the great joy of resurrection. He is who we need. Now, Jesus went through all of that because he knows that we are a people who will experience deep sadness in our lives. Jesus knows that we're a people who will experience times of hopelessness. And so he's walked the road of hopelessness before us. And he says, I'm the way through it. Let me join you on that road. Let me tell you what you need to hear. Let me show you a way through. Jesus is our hope. Jesus is our hope. And so they get to Emmaus. Jesus finishes his sermon. And it says this, as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, stay with us, for it's nearly evening. The day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. Night falls. Jesus makes like he's going further, that he's going to go past Emmaus. It's a fantastic moment, isn't it? He knew that he was going to stay, but he makes as if he's going further. And there's this sense that Jesus is really waiting for them to respond to his sermon. He doesn't impose himself. He doesn't force anything. He doesn't say, well, I'm coming in. He waits for an invitation. Now, I think this is a great illustration, a great image of our own faith journeys, of my faith journey, of yours. That Jesus waits for our invitation. You know, there comes a point, doesn't there, where if we've been around church long enough, we've heard all the sermons, we've sung all the songs, we've read all the books, we've had all the conversations about faith. But Jesus is waiting for us to open up our hearts to him. You know, in the same way that he waits for the disciples to invite him into the house, he waits for us. He says, will you invite me in? Will you invite him to stay? We've got a choice. On our road of hopelessness, when Jesus comes and meets us, we can invite him to stay, to be part of our lives, to stay longer than just the journey, or we can push him away. Jesus joins us on our road of hopelessness. He waits for our invitation. And finally, he brings us to hope. Look at what happens after they invite him in. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? Then they got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, it's true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon. Then the two told what happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread. Oh, I love this description. They get up and they run immediately back to Jerusalem. You wouldn't do that at night. It was dangerous. You wouldn't travel at night. But they're so energized. Their tanks are full. And they just want to go. They're excited. You know, they've moved from being totally hopeless and standing still in despair. And now they're running that same road that they were walking before, but they are full of hope. It is true. It's true. Jesus really has come back to life. We've just seen him. All their dreams, all their hopes are suddenly not lost. The one who walked on the road of hopelessness with them, he's been invited to stay with them, and now they are full of hope. We can all walk this road of hopelessness. I wish I could promise you that you never would and that your life will go swimmingly well from here on in. But I'm going to walk a road of hopelessness and you will as well at some point. All is not lost on that road. It's not such a bad place to be. Because this story shows us that Jesus joins us on that road. He tells us what we need to hear if we listen to him. And then he waits for an invitation for us to invite him into our lives, to stay with us. And when we do that, our eyes can open. We can recognise who he truly is, and he brings us to hope. And we can walk that same road again, but with eyes open to who Jesus really is.